March, I'm not 100% sure. Because I'll be Jacob's going to schedule some other stuff for you. But we're talking about Zionism. Nice controversial topic. And in particular, Zionism comes in three flavors, like a vanilla, chocolate, strawberry. Political Zionism, cultural Zionism, and religious Zionism. But religious Zionism itself can be subdivided into messianic and non-messianic. So there are actually two different forms of religious Zionism. Political Zionism is essentially more or less a creation of the mid to late 19th century. It corresponds with the rise of nationalism in Europe, when all sorts of ethnic groups were trying to get independence. By the 19th century, many, many countries, many nations established their own, or many cultures established their own nations, and political Zionism was connected to that. The most famous and probably the most successful advocate of political Zionism was Theodor Herzl. And Herzl saw the establishment of a Jewish state as a solution to European anti-Semitism. He himself was totally assimilated. He knew nothing about Judaism. Really a Tinoch Shenishpa. So again, I'm not here to insult him in any way. But he indeed was a Tinoch Shenishpa. But as a result of the Dreyfus trial, he realized that in spite of the so-called emancipation of the ghetto throughout Europe, people still hated Jews. Jews were not accepted. And he came up with the idea that if we only had our own country, we'd be normal. We'd be like everybody else. At that point, we would be respected by the Umos Olam, and Jews would be able to live in peace. Initially, Herzl was so indifferent to religion, in other words, he really didn't care, that supposedly he made a deal with the Pope, and I believe this is documented, in which he says if the Pope would intervene with the Ottoman Empire, right, the Ottoman Turkey, the Ottoman Empire in Constantinople ruled over Palestine at the time, and if the Pope would negotiate with the head of the Ottoman Empire to give Palestine to the Jews, Herzl guaranteed that he would deliver a few thousand Jews, including himself, in Vatican City, to convert to Catholicism. He says, I'll tell you what, that's the deal. Get us this land and we'll become Catholics. Now, what the truth of the matter is, Herzl died relatively young. The truth is, towards the end of his life, as he was meeting more and more Rabbanim and people who saw a certain religious aspect, Herzl did change a little bit, and at least he saw a positive role. I mean, he didn't become a Baal Tshuva, but he saw a positive role in religion. But initially, he was absolutely indifferent to it, if not hostile. It didn't enter into his calculation whatsoever. But again, as far as Herzl was concerned, the raison d'etre of a Jewish state, or a state of the Jews, depending how you translate it, was a solution to anti-Semitism. Well, once again, one can certainly argue that with all of the blessings of the Medina, if we say that there are blessings of Eretz Yisrael as well, the one thing it has not ended is it has not ended anti-Semitism. For a brief few years after the Holocaust, the world was had rachmanis for Jews. That's very, very true. And indeed, part of why the UN resolution establishing the State of Israel did secure an overwhelming majority of support was the guilt over the fact that 6 million Jews had just lost their lives in World War II. But that rachmanis faded very, very quickly. And it is routinely, as anyone knows, that the Holocaust argument is often used to describe who the Jews are, that we are described as perpetuating a Holocaust against the Arabs and everything else, and it's no longer a source of rachamim for Am Yisrael, but it's often used as an accusation against Am Yisrael. So in that sense, putting aside even religion for a moment, Herzl was not too accurate about that. But once again, you understand the Shitasai, if the whole issue was political independence would be a solution to anti-Semitism, then it didn't even have to be Eretz Yisrael. That's why he was willing to go with Uganda and various other places as well, because it didn't make a difference where it was, as long as we had our own country. Of course, this was encapsulated with a remark that I believe is attributed to Ben-Gurion, but some say it was Bialik earlier, in which we know we've made it as a nation when we have our own pickpockets and kidnappers. We want to be kachal ha-goyim, right? And then we know we've made it. We shouldn't be special or unique. Okay. Now, cultural Zionism, which again is not religious yet, had a very different orientation. Cultural Zionism saw that the Jewish people did have a unique aspect to contribute to the world in terms of morals, ethics, philosophy, science, thought, not necessarily Torah thought, but ideals that are abstracted from the Jewish tradition, more from the Bible than from the Talmud, to be sure. And the outstanding exponents of what we would call cultural Zionism was a Maskil in Russia. Of course, he was a Maskil, was not religious, a non-religious Maskil, who went by the pen name Achad Ha'am, one of the people. He wrote in very very fluent Hebrew, and his name was actually Usher Ginsburg, a Russian fellow, and he was a sharp opponent of Theodor Herzl. Theodor Herzl emphasized political independence as the raison d'etre. Achad Ha'am actually was almost naturae carta in this following way. He said, Jews should not get involved in politics. They should not get involved in power. They should not get involved in negotiating for territory, and kal vachomer fighting for territory, because that corrupts the spiritual essence. Again, this is the use of spirituality in a slightly different way than we normally use it. He was not referring, when he talked about spirituality, and he talked about spirituality, he was not talking about Torah and mitzvos, but he was talking about ideas that on some level are connected to Torah and mitzvos, the notion of living for a higher purpose. And therefore, Achad Ha'am envisioned many, many Jews coming to Israel, and he saw Eretz Israel as very central, but they would be under the Ottoman Empire or whatever government would be ruling. They wouldn't be into politics. They would establish kibbutzim. They would farm the land. They would have universities. There would be a cultural renaissance. And he actually was very much against political Zionism because he felt that power will corrupt the Jew, and the Jew's very uniqueness is his powerlessness, which allows him to concentrate on spiritual ideas. By the way, the famous non-religious Jewish philosopher Martin Buber was a Talmud and a very close associate of Achad Ha'am, and essentially embraced his idea. Martin Buber was absolutely against the Jewish state, although he was in favor of Jewish intellectual life in Eretz Israel. He did not want there to be a Jewish state. And in fact, most of the movement that is called post-Zionism, again, I don't know if you're familiar with this, this is a movement that is largely the movement of Chiloni Israeli intellectuals. They are against, they've become Naturae Cartonics without tefillin. They are against the idea of a state of Israel. They feel Israel has been corrupted by power and politics. And it was a mistake, it was a wrong left turn in 1948 to even have a state. They're called post-Zionists. And according to a recent book on post-Zionism by I happen to be an Orthodox person, but he's an academic himself at Sioni, he argues that Martin Buber is the Rebbe of this whole machla. In other words, he basically blames Martin Buber, because Martin Buber was a professor in Hebrew University for many, many years, and all of the intellectual Gedolim, so to speak, of academia are Talmidim of Martin Buber, and therefore he blames Martin Buber for the whole post-Zionist phenomenon. But I would just go one generation back, that Martin Buber's Yesodos were essentially in Achad Ha'am, who was a Zionist, but he was a cultural Zionist. He was not a political Zionist. And so on one hand, the Shvach is that he rejected the idea that Jews are Kechol HaGoyim. That's the one thing that Achad Ha'am rejected. On the other hand, He did not see Jewish singularity in Torah and Mitzvot, but he saw it in ethical ideas that are derived largely from Tanakh and maybe some aspects of Agadita and Chazal. As you know, Martin Buber himself loved Hasidus, but it's very, very fascinating. In fact, Martin Buber made a two-volume German collection, which was translated in English, called Tales of Hasidim. But here's a fascinating thing. Martin Buber only liked the early Hasidus. He didn't like later Hasidus. What's the pshat? So here's the idea. If you remember when we discussed the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon put the earlier generations of Hasidus in Cherem, because the Vilna Gaon thought there were some extremists, even though they were a minority, that were not keeping halacha kedin. They were focusing on emotion, they were focusing on subjectivity, and they were not necessarily so zoher in Torah and mitzvahs, and the Vilna Gaon felt it was a great sakana. Now, as a result of the Vilna Gaon's Cherem, Hasidus itself became much more frum and fakert. In many ways, they became more zoher in mitzvahs than even misnagdim. So what is regarded as a shvach mitzad people who are shomrei Torah, Martin Buber regarded as a betrayal. He said, hey, the whole godless of Hasidus, in his misinterpretation, was that it freed you of halacha, it allowed you to be spontaneous and focus on your inner spirituality without all of these pratim. What a nebuch that they betrayed that by becoming frum. So Martin Buber only has like that aspect of Hasidus that stresses subjectivity. He didn't like what Hasidus later became, although for Kert, you know, we say that that was a strengthening of it. But be it as it may, this is what we call cultural Zionism. And it really is a legacy that's very powerful in the state of Israel today. In fact, it's very, very true that among the intelligentsia, and there are quite a few intelligentsia who are chiloni in the universities, kemat none of them is a supporter of political Zionism. They are all called post-Zionists, which is essentially rooted in cultural Zionism. And this creates a tremendous security problem for the state of Israel, because many of the soldiers in the army are exposed to this type of education. And then they wonder, what are we fighting for? Why should we, you know, go against these Palestinian terrorists or whatever it is? You know, was it? Halalu avdei avodah zarah, halalu avdei avodah zarah. They're no better. You know, we're no better than them. So it actually has created, I mean, even from a political standpoint, it is that post-Zionism has actually created a security crisis in the army. So when people say the biggest problem that the army faces is Haredim who walk out when women are singing, which somehow, I don't know, this seems to be the biggest issue that the army faces, how it's inconceivable that we can allow someone to walk out when a woman is singing, I'll tell you there are much more serious problems that the army faces. And post-Zionism is a very, very serious security problem.
How did he get the name of
Shara'am? He gave himself that name. In other words, in Russia, you know, Russia had this thing that everybody took on a pseudonym. I mean, you know, Stalin. Like Stalin means man of steel. His name was something else. Lenin. So in Russia, the mahalach was that you'd write articles for newspapers and you'd never give your real name. So Shara'am wrote in Hebrew papers. He says, I'm one of the people, nobody special. I'm just one of a fellow Jew. Now, I do want to point out, though, that unlike Herzl, who again, no fault of his own, was an Amoritz. He knew nothing at all. Achad Ha'am came from a milieu, maybe he was a real Apikoros, he came from the milieu of people who grew up in religious homes, who were exposed to religious Jews. Achad Ha'am, you know, knew what Torah and Mitzvot was, although, and he had a certain affection for it, although he felt that you have to move on, you can't just stick with it. So it's very, very different. In fact, even Golda Meir once said to a Haredi member of the Knesset, she said to him around 40 years ago, you guys are going to miss us when we're gone, because at least we know the world that you came from. The people after us aren't even going to know. So she actually said that, you know, at least we know this world. And Achad Ha'am certainly knew that world. He grew up in the religious life of Russia.
What year is that?
Achad Ha'am? Achad Ha'am basically died in the very early 1900s.
Left wing.
Say again?
Left wing. Is
what at left wing?
Is Achad Ha'am the people who are protesting?
Well, almost all of them are left-wing, yes. I mean, you could actually say almost definitionally, political Zionism is right-wing, and cultural Zionism is left-wing. That happens to be the case, because right-wing is about keeping power, and left-wing is about abdicating power. And cultural Zionism essentially says, let's abdicate power. Of course, it had a very naive view, which dovetails with the Ture Karta, that if we only don't push for a state, those nice Arabs will just, you know, let us do everything we want, and we can live in shalom with our Arab brethren. That's what the Ture Karta says. And cultural Zionism made the same claim. Martin Buber said it. That is, if we would not have designs of statehood, there would be no machlokas between Jews and Arabs, and everybody could live with peace. Yeah.
I thought that before the state was created, everyone, even though I never believed that there shouldn't be a state, actually.
Well, that obviously can't be true. You can't say everybody believes, because... I didn't get... I'm going to get to religious now. In other words, I was describing political and then cultural.
You said like the true character of people who don't want a state.
No, I understand. But, I'm using it as an example of a Kurd. In other words, all I'm saying is... that if you look at the current environment, Nature Karta and Chiloni Intelligentsia in Hebrew University have the same shita. It's like a strange thing. No, but you're correct. I'll talk about the religious issue in a moment. Yeah.
In some respect, I mean, Martin Buber looked at a time when there was no state.
That's correct. Well, no, that's not true. No. That's not true. He came to Israel before there was a state.
Right. So
but Martin Buber died in the 60s.
Right, so what I'm saying is that coming in,
that's right. In fact, as the point that was just made, I mean, we're going to see in a moment, and I've said it before as well, that before 1948, most, not all, but most of the yeshiva Haredi world was not in favor of actively establishing a state.
These intelligentsia,
yeah,
are pretty really shooting themselves in the foot. I think Martin Buber would argue that now that you have a state, you disband it.
No, that's a good point. And, you know, it's hard to know what Martin Buber would say. You know, we don't know. But nevertheless, this author at Sioni does argue that Martin Buber was the Shirish Pire Reish Valana of post-Zionism, because he taught in Hebrew University for many, many years. And he was the dominant philosopher on campus, and that had a big hashpa. You know, it's not just yeshivos that have talmidim. there are big academicians who have tremendous influence on their circles, and those circles permeate. Israel is a small country, and you know, if you factor out people who are from, just a few intellectuals can have a tremendous influence on how a general population perceives things. Yeah.
What is the idea of post-Zionism in regards to, like, what if they had their way, what would happen right now with the state?
Well, there are variations there as well. Some say, let's get rid of the state of Israel totally. But others say the following. Others basically say that Israel should be a state of all of its citizens, meaning to say that get rid of the Hatikva, that talks about, you know, the Jews, this is the place where the Jews come. And, you know, Arabs and Jews should be exactly equal. The truth is, in many ways, they already are, but they should be equal, and there should be no sense that Israel is a state of the Jewish people more than it is of the Arab people. And they should all be exactly the same. There should be no Magen David in the flag. There should be no menorah as a sign. You know.
It's not the same thing as in the Ture Karta.
No, it's not the same. The Ture Karta says just disband. They're not saying that, most of them, but they're saying that it shouldn't be a Jewish thing. Jewish is racism and the like. By the way, I know someone that I actually grew up with, a friend of my parents, whose parents were Holocaust survivors. And this young lady is absolutely convinced. She's a very prominent academic in America, works for Harvard University. And she often compares what the state of Israel does to Arabs with the Holocaust and the things that were done to her parents. And she talks about that. What's tragic, if it wouldn't be, what would be funny if it wouldn't be tragic is she and her husband, Jewish husband, adopted two children. And they tell the children that they call this country Palestine. And she goes here, she comes here quite often in East Jerusalem to work with the Palestinians. And the little kids, like 5-year-old kids, oh, we're going to Palestine tomorrow, you know, yeah, that's just, right. As they say, it would be funny if it wouldn't be so sad. Okay. Now, the third prong of Zionism is religious Zionism. And religious Zionism comes from people who are ma'aminim, except related to a character, we characterize them, but generally speaking, people who are ma'aminim in Torah and mitzvahs. And they saw a positive value in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. But even here, the movement is very diverse, or was very diverse and very confusing, certainly in the 19th century. There were those who simply said, like the cultural Zionists, Yidden should come to Eretz Yisrael. They weren't talking about statehood. There were others who said, I'll give you some makaris on this, others who talked about that there's a mitzvah to establish a Medina. Is that right? There were others who thought that this is a mechanism to bring Mashiach. And there were others who said, no, nothing to do with Mashiach. Mashiach is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Cheshbon, but there's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So within this movement, so what's going on in the 19th century is all of these different currents, the nationalistic political currents, the Echad Ha'am cultural Zionism, religious Zionism, which was either miyused on Yishuv Eretz Yisrael but not a Medina, or Yishuv Eretz Yisrael plus a Medina, or Yishuv Eretz Yisrael plus a Medina because that's Makarav Geula, or no, it's not Makarav Geula, but it's a good thing to do anyway. And all of these people were trying to work together. Now, just to give you an example, I mentioned before, if you take Volozhin, the Netziv was involved in what you might call the non-Messianic, non-Medina Yishuv Haaretz. The Netziv was machshir very much the idea of Yidden buying land and farming land and building cities and building communities. On the other hand, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, although he was not misnagate to that, but Rav Chaim Soloveitchik did not want to get involved at all because he felt that if you're mechaber yourself to political Zionism, he considered political Zionism to be a maisa sutton to replace Torah and mitzvahs by a national identity. And memela, because of the idea of Ayla Rush, Ayla Shechenai, Rav Chaim was mamash a tremendous kanoi against anything to do with Zionism, even the good part, because he felt that the hischabrus Torah would be so powerful. Again, you can debate about who was right. So the Netziv and Rav Chaim had two different shitas. But let me give you a few classical makaris, just so you'll understand the religious Zionist worldview a little more. That is, let's start with the Ramban. Right, there is a big machlekes, the Rambam and the Ramban, legabe the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban, in his Hasagais to the Sefer HaMitzvahs, gives a listing of certain mitzvahs that the Rambam left out. And one of the mitzvahs that the Ramban counts, that the Rambam left out, is a mitzvah that the Ramban calls Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And this is based on a pasuk in Bamidbar, in Parshas Masai. V'rishtem es ha'oretz v'yishavtem ba. Zakt Ramban, zuhi mitzvas Yishuv Eretz Yisrael that Chazal talk about. I mean, the lashon of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a lashon that appears in Chazal a lot. The Ramban makes it formally one of the 613 mitzvahs. Now, here's an important point. The Ramban is then masbir that this mitzvah has four components. There are four chalakim of what is the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And it's very clear that according to the Ramban, there's a political component. Because the first component, the Ramban says, is, the first component is, there is a mitzvah min haTorah to acquire and conquer by force of arms, if necessary, all land that is within the gavul within the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael as defined in the Torah, which, by the way, are actually much larger than even the Medina today. And the Ramban makes the point, he performs all those things you're going to say, and don't think this is only Bizman HaMikdash or Bizman HaMelech. He says, no, even Bizman HaZeh. So according to the Ramban, there is a mitzvah of kibush. Kibush means sovereignty. In other words, Jews have to rule over it. So already you see in the Ramban the notion of, now again, I'm not discussing non-religious people establishment, but in terms of the mitzvah itself is a mitzvah of kibush, even Bizman HaZeh. The second component, Ramban says, the land should not be shemama. That means that even after we have sovereignty and shlita over the land, we don't leave it vacant or empty, but we use it in ways that are good. Either yishuv, people live, like miyushuv, or you cultivate it agriculturally, or you manufacture, whatever it is. In other words, you don't just leave it desolate. You're mechuyev to settle it in a productive way. Right? Lo ne'azev shemama. So, for example, leaving land vacant as a security buffer or the like, the Ramban would say, is not necessarily the best thing. Number three, Ramban says, now this is interesting, this is almost a nevuah. He says, it is aser min ha-taira for any yid to define another country as the national home of the Jews. Because even if you're living in Chutz La'aretz, but you have to be makir, that Am Yisrael's home is Eretz Yisrael. It's almost a nevuah, Keneged Herzl's Uganda program. In other words, to say that some other country is the homeland of the Jews, that's us. That's a violation of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now, these first three, you'll notice, don't yet say where you have to live. In other words, the first three are really, let me just add one thing. The idea of Shemama, the Ramban also adds, not to leave it Shemama, also includes a mitzvah to beautify the land to whatever degree possible. So the emes is, when you plant a tree in Eretz Yisrael or you pick up the garbage in Eretz Yisrael, the Alter of Slobodka used to say, you're makayim, the inyan of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, by making it a more beautiful, attractive place. That's taka Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Right? We had Tu B'Shvat, something Tu B'Shvat says, you celebrate the environment, right? So this is an inyan. Now, you'll notice, though, that the first three pratim don't yet say where you have to live. In other words, I could live in America and support the army and plant trees and consider Eretz Yisrael the Jewish homeland. It's the fourth component that everybody focuses on, where he says, every yachid mi Yisrael, unless he has a heter, and there are heterim, is mechuyev to live in Eretz Yisrael. So the first three are obligations of the tzibor. And the last one is an obligation of the yachid. Now, for shteitzach, I'm not going to give a whole shir on this. Even the Ramban is maida, there are heterim. The Gemara itself says a person can even leave Eretz Yisrael. Lisa isha, lilmai taira, parnosa. Okay, these are heterim. In other words, the Ramban is not saying it's not shayach a heter to live in Chutz La'aretz. And again, you talk to a rav or a paisek about what the heterim are. But the Ramban is saying, without a heter, you're mechuyev to live here. That's what he says. So you have to live here, unless you have a heter. There are heterim, but you have to. Now, which is an important idea, because many people in America, for example, don't look at it that way. They don't say, I have to live in Eretz unless I have a heter. You know, they, it's not on the radar. The Ramban is telling us, you have a chiyuv to be here unless. Now, I want to point out one thing. That is, there is a tshuva from Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe says, in the Igros Moshe, that when the Ramban says there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, it is bebechinas mitzvah kiyumis, and not a mitzvah chiyuvis. Mitzvah chiyuvis means a mitzvah that you have to do, like I have to work filling every day. A mitzvah kiyumis means if I do it, I'm a kayam a mitzvah, like tzitzis, right? If I wear a beged of dalet kanfais with tzitzis, I'm a kayam a mitzvah, but I'm not mechuyev to be loivesh as a beged. Rav Moshe Tainas, in the Ramban, it's only a mitzvah kiyumis, not a mitzvah chiyuvis. But again, Laniyastaiti is not just me. Laniyastaiti, the Lashon of the Ramban, you know, obviously I have to be mavatal myself, but the Lashon of the Ramban is kimat, not saival, that interpretation at all. You can look at the Ramban at the end of the Sefer Mitzvos, and except for Rav Moshe, all Achrayim have always assumed for a Dover Pashut that the Ramban, now again, there is another sheet of the Ramban, right? But the Ramban holds it's a mitzvah chiyuvis unless you have a heter. But just to be accurate, I do want you to know at least the Igros Moshe says it's a mitzvah chiyuvis. Now, the one kasha you might ask is very obvious kasha. Where did the Ramban live? The Ramban lived in Catholic Spain. B'Seif Yamav, he came to Eretz Yisrael. He died in Eretz Yisrael, but only because he was kicked out of Spain, right? If you know the famous Misa, that there was an apostate Jew that became a friar, a priest, and he challenged the Ramban to debate about Yashka, and this guy was trying to bring proofs from Midrashim and Gemaras about Yashka, and the Ramban was summoned by the king of Spain to debate all of this. And in those days, that was popular entertainment, so there was a big audience. And at the end, the king would decide who was victorious, and there was good news and bad news. The good news was the Ramban was considered to be the better debater. The bad news was, because he discredited the church, he would be expelled, banished from Spain. The good news was, that's how the Ramban got to Eretz Yisrael. So, in fact, the Ramban gave us a record of this in the Kisvei HaRamban. And it's been translated in English as well. And I understand they even made a Broadway play out of it. It's called The Disputation at Barcelona. And what it is basically, it's a very, very interesting thing. In other words, this guy brings up this Medrash, that Gemara, and the Ramban is Masbir, how we understand all these different things. And the Ramban made a record of the debate. But B'Seif Yamav, he was kicked out of Spain. He had to leave Spain. He came to Eretz Yisrael. He wrote his Perush al HaTorah in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, it's very, very fascinating that you see that he even became a little bit of an archaeologist. He says when he came to Eretz Yisrael, there's a Machlekes Rashi in Tosfos, how much is a Machtes HaShekel? How much silver does a Machtes HaShekel coin contain for Pidyon HaBen? All the Inyanim. So the Machlekes Rashi in Tosfos. So the Ramban said, when I got to Eretz Yisrael, I bought the Machtes HaShekel coin from an Arab who sold me a coin from the Zman HaMikdash, and I waited exactly, and he proved that Rashi was correct. He says Rashi was right. He says that this was the Machtes HaShekel. So the Ramban actually was Machria in a Machlekes, the share of Pidyon HaBen and everything else from the coin that he bought from the Arab. We have, besides the famous Igeres Ramban about Anova, we have other letters the Ramban wrote to his family from Eretz Yisrael. And the Ramban writes amazing things. He says that the holier the makam, the more shemama it is. Yerushalayim was more nechrav than the rest. And he says there was not even a minyan in Yerushalayim. There was not a Sefer Torah. They had to get a Sefer Torah from Chevron for Yamim Naran. And they had to get like a few yidden here and a few yidden there. The major Jewish city in Eretz Yisrael at the time was Akko, up north. Major, I mean, it had a few minyanim of Yidden, and the Ramban gave his famous drasha of Rosh Hashanah, a famous long drasha, which was given orally. In fact, you know, as a Rav, you know, I've experienced that people don't like long drashas, but apparently they must have had more patience, because the drasha of the Ramban and Rosh Hashanah would take at least 3 hours to give, if you look at the number of pages. And he says he gave it Rosh Hashanah, first day of Rosh Hashanah in Akko. You know, so apparently he had a three-hour drasha. But okay, I guess maybe if the Ramban's giving the drasha, maybe you'll listen. But okay, but anyway, yeah, Sam. That's what Ramban says.
Do you agree with the way it was done now, or like he feels that it has to be done?
Now, what do you mean?
Kind of mitzvah doing it the way they did it, or if it wasn't done on Pi Torah, it's not a mitzvah.
That's a good question. It's not so boring what he would say about an army that's not completely maimed in Torah and the like. The one thing we could say is that the Ramban would not be in favor of giving up territory because you're believed to be Kaivish. You know? So if you're believed to be Kaivish, how is it you talking that you give it up? And what are you going to say? Pikuach Nefesh? But it's not Shaykh. When there's a commandment to wage Mulchama, the Minchas Chinuch says there's no Hetra Pikuach Nefesh. No soldier can say, I'm Putter from waging a Mulchama that the Torah is Mechayev because Mulchamas are dangerous. You know, that's what it is. When the Torah is Mechayev Mulchama, it's not Shaykh Pikuach Nefesh to Pati.
If the land would have been conquered in this tragic way, what would be the way we're based in now? We would see somebody driving on Shabbos and we would get locked up their car? Or?
No. See, that's a totally separate issue. The reason it's a separate issue is the following. In order for a Sanhedrin to be created, you have to have smicha. And smicha is the unbroken ordination going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So even if we conquered Eretz Yisrael Pivotaya and we were Mekayim, the Mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael, that still wouldn't enable the chiddush of dinei nefashas that requires smicha. Okay, so that wouldn't happen. That wouldn't happen. In other words, and the truth is, maybe secreted. I can't speak for extreme group, but the truth is, ruba deruba of even the most Haredi Jew is not in favor of let's kill people that are mechallel Shabbos. I mean, the emphasis is you need a Sanhedrin, you need smicha, and even then, what if Chazal say? The Sanhedrin that killed somebody every 70 years was called a chavlan. So it's not something that, it's not like the Taliban that like wants to kill people.
On the other hand, you need agus. This is you can't have agus on somebody. You need help somebody.
Then that's right. You need agus. You need hasra. Yeah. It's not going to be right. Well, normally the Sanhedrin cannot sentence you to death, but when there's a melech, the melech can do it. Shalom, and it can. Doesn't say will. Can. Can.
So the question is, with the melech, are you going to kill him?
Well, I think you have to keep in mind the chiddush of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says, in the beginning of Yerideya, a very, very important yisite, the Chazon Ish says that all the dinim of Chazal about people are rishayim and rishayim, we if they fall into a pit, we're not maila them, etc. The Chazon Ish says that was only shayach bisman hamikdash, when there's nevuah, when there's a giloy shechina. So then, if somebody is mayreit, he is that's rishus. But in a time of hester panim, the Chazon Ish says, even people who are committing averus are not al pi din rishayim, because they simply are not exposed to the fullness of kedusha, and therefore the Chazon Ish says we can only be meishich, so called rishayim, with avosos ava, the very, very famous Chazon Ish, only with ropes of to tie them up, but ropes of love to bring them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Chazon Ish himself basically felt that the inyanim of any type of physical violence against people who are not keeping mitzvahs, he says, was totally wrong. And the only way to deal with someone who's not keeping mitzvahs is in a very loving and kind way. That's the Chazon Ish in Yerideya says that. That all the halachas of Chazal of Meiridin Vlomaila only apply Bizman HaMikdash, Bizman HaNevuah. It does not apply when there's a man of Hester Panim. But I just want to answer this basic question. Why didn't the Ramban go earlier? The Ramban didn't go till he was forced to go. We don't have a complete answer to this, but one just has to know that even though the mitzvah of milchama is not nitche for ruach nefesh, but the individual mitzvah of living in Eretz Israel, if it's pikuach nefesh, I'm pater. And you have to understand that the conditions of traveling to Eretz Israel in those days, it was not a 10-hour flight on El Al, but you're talking about a very, very dangerous land and sea voyage in which there were pirates. Of course, I hear now there are still pirates. That's interesting in Somalia, but there were pirates, there were wild animals, there were ganavim, there were murderers. Extremely, extremely dangerous. And the emes is, the Ramban had a cheshbon, must have had a cheshbon, that there was a heter pikuach nefesh. Of course, the Ramban had other heterim as well. The Ramban was the gadol hador there. The Ramban was the amud of Hayra, call Beis Yisrael Nishan Olam. And Mimela, today, because of communications, you can be anywhere in the world and your your Torah can go out. Right? You don't have to live in New York to give psukim to people in New York. But if you're the Ramban that is the Gadol Hador and the Amud of Hayra for Spain and for France and for Germany, then you know you have to make a cheshbon. Should I go to Eretz Yisrael? I mean, so the Ramban had hetevim, in other words, that maybe the average person might not have had, either pikuach nefesh under the conditions, or he was needed where he was. Okay, now this is only one side of the coin. This is the shitas haRamban. The problem is, what is the shita of the Ramban? Now, there are two points we could say with Vados, and everything else is uncertain. Point number one is only a negative. The Ramban does not count in the list of the 613 mitzvos a mitzvah called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't say it's not a mitzvah. He doesn't count it. And that's going to be the question, what does that mean? That's one point. He doesn't count it. The second point is also important, however. In spite of the fact that he doesn't count it, in Hilchos Malachim, he has several paragraphs, several halachas, where he talks about the godless of living in Eretz Yisrael, the kedusha of living in Eretz Yisrael. He brings the many mamorei chazal in Maseches Ksuvos, at the very end of the Maseches, which says, Kol ador be'Eretz Yisrael, kilu yesh lo aloka. If you live in Eretz Yisrael, you have a direct connection to Hashem. If you live in Chutz La'aretz, it's like you don't have that connection. He brings that. So even if it's not a mitzvah, he brings that. He even says something which no Rosh Hashiva will paskin today. He says, better to live in Eretz Yisrael be'ir sherubo oved kechavim milagor b'chutz la'aretz be'ir sherubo Yisrael. If you read the Rambam literally, just literally, it says, if I have a choice to be in Lakewood or to live in Netzeret, right, no Jews up there, he says, huh? Is that good? Well, how many yidden? I mean, once you move in, you're a yid. Okay. Be it as it may, yeah, you have to understand exactly what he means. But the only point I want to make is that even if the Rambam doesn't count it as a mitzvah, the Rambam Vadai speaks about the milus, the ruchnistika milus of Eretz Yisrael. He was not indifferent. And in fact, interestingly enough, the Rambam attempted to come to Eretz Yisrael several times, which, you know, which the Ramban did not. Right? The Ramban doesn't admit it didn't. The Rambam, of course, was closer. The Rambam was in Egypt and Morocco. It was not so far for him. But nevertheless, several times, as a child even, the Rambam's father, the Rambam's family, tried to come to Eretz Yisrael, and they actually were here. And in fact, the Rambam says he was zeicher to be mishtateach by the Kaisel Maravi. Now then, what did the Kaisel look like then? It was like 2 feet above the ground. Garbage had been dumped for hundreds and hundreds of years. A little thing above the ground. A little thing. There was no plaza, that's for sure. That you didn't even have until after 67. But there wasn't even a Kaisel. Everything was covered up. And the Rambam said that for the rest of his life, he made that day a Yom Tov. He says, the day that he was zeicha to be mispalel by the Kaisel Maravi became a chag for him. He made it as a Yom Tov. So in many ways, I just want to say, the issue of whether it's a mitzvah is important in Lumbus, but it's not necessarily so important in Maisa. Because even Ramban that says it's a mitzvah is maskim there are a tayyeh. And even the Rambam that says it's not a mitzvah says you should come. Right? So kimat, there's not a lot of difference. Of course, on the other part, there could be differences. So for example, the Rambam might matir giving back land for pikuach nefesh, which the Ramban might not, right? That would be a nafkamina and the like. But here's the thing. The one thing I want to say is, there's a big, big machlekes achreinim. What is the daya of the Rambam on whether Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah? The general mahalich is the mahalich that was articulated by the Sefer Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther is not the Megillah in Tanakh, but if you look at a Sefer HaMitzvahs, you'll notice that the Ramban is the inner thing, like Rashi, But the main perish that defends the Rambam from the Ramban's kashas is a sefer that's called Megillas Esther. The Mechaber named it after his mother, Esther. And the Megillas Esther is the standard interpretation that says the Rambam holds that after the Chorban, there is no mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael until there's Kibbutz Goliath and Yemosa Mashiach. Again, that's not a Torah character. He doesn't say it's Osir, but he says there's no mitzvah. I'll talk about the Mukkah for that. And the Mailer, the Megillas Esther, learns that the Rambam Taka holds there is no mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now, say again?
Even if there's a mitzvah, it's
no, because the Rambam. Well, okay, that's true. But the Rambam has in the klalim of what you count as a mitzvah. The Rambam says any mitzvah that's not noyeg l'dayreis all the time is not called the tayag mitzvah. So there may be a mitzvah, but it's not activated right now. Now, as you might expect, the Dati Liumi Poskim not only say you have to follow Ramban, but they have a Mahalech that even the Rambam is Maida, that it's a mitzvah. How do you get that? I mean, how can you say the Rambam says there's a Chiyuv to live there? So this is what they say. It's a very ingenious Mahalech, actually. Before the Rambam lists the mitzvahs, before he lists the mitzvahs, the Rambam has 14 klolin. In fact, that's the most lumdish part of the Sefer HaMitzvahs. 14 rules of how do you count mitzvahs. You see why the Rambam did this? The Rambam was the only mechaber who ever did this. Because the Rambam approached it very scientifically. On one hand, we got this number. We got to come up with 613. 248 positive, 365 negative. On the other hand, if you open up a chumash, and you look at every tzivoy the Eibishter gave, you get a lot more than 613. You get a few thousand. So you gotta figure out a classification system of what counts and what doesn't count. And the Rambam did this in great, great detail. Just to give you one example, let's say a Korban Chatas. When you bring a Korban Chatas, the Torah gives you 50 steps. The Kohen shall shech, the Kohen shall be Zorek, right? So is there a mitzvah called Shechitas Chatas? So the Rambam says, no, there's something called Lasos Avodas Korban Chatas. And that way you pick up 20 and count them as one. Right? Things like that. So one of his klolim is that we don't count as a mitzvah to keep the Torah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says many times, Ushmartem es mitzvosai. So, is there a mitzvah to keep the whole Torah? In other words, do I count that as one of the 613 mitzvahs? He says, no, because it's not telling you anything new, it's just telling you to keep all the specifics. So, the Rambam says, any statement in the Torah which is simply commanding you to keep the whole Torah is not counted as a separate mitzvah. Everyone understands that you say. That's what the Rambam says. So says the Dati Liumi Poskim, they say the following. We know, and the Ramban actually says this, although we're saying this in the Rambam, and actually Rashi says it as well, and it's based on a Sifri, that really no mitzvah can be done bishleimus except in Eretz Yisrael. We don't just mean mitzvahs teluyas bi'aretz, like Truma. But even tefillin and kashrus and Shabbos. Because what does Rashi bring? Rashi says, the only reason we keep mitzvahs in chutz la'aretz is to be a tziyun, to be a reminder, so we'll know what to do when we get back to Eretz Yisrael. So it turns out that when you live in Eretz Yisrael, you have the emistik akiyum of Shabbos, of kashrus. So we're made like this. So they say the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah to keep the whole Torah. So the reason the Rambam doesn't count it is not because it's not a chiyuv, but it's a tzivoy hakoylel. So the kitzur, we have the following. Ramban shita is beferish Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a Chiyuv D'Oraisa. And what's interesting is that the Ramban Vaday includes not just living, but he includes the political dimension. That's important. The Ramban was a political Zionist, Al Pi Teira, because he says there's a Chiyuv that Yidden should have Shalita over Eretz Yisrael. Huh? Well, I'll get to that, but this is what the Ramban says. Ramban is Meshabeach, the Maila of living in Eretz Yisrael, for sure. He doesn't talk about a Medina. He does not count it as a mitzvah, but we have two opposite Mahalchim. In how to understand the Ramban, Megillah Esther says, there's Taka, not a mitzvah, till Yemos HaMashiach, even to live in Eretz Yisrael, in Kal V'chomer estate. The Dati Liumi position of many, I have to find, I don't remember the exact Rav or Rosh Hashiva that said it, but it's a Mahalach that is often stated, is that Fakert, even the Rambam is Maida, that there's a Chiyav of Ishav Eretz Yisrael, but it is a Tzivoy HaKailo Kala Taira Kula, and so therefore for a technical reason, it's not counted in the 613, but it's still a Chiyav Gomel. Now, to go back to the Megillah Esther, which you just said, Megillah Esther brings a raya to the Rambam Shita, that there's no mitzvah of Yishav Eretz Yisrael B'zman Hazeh, from a Gemara in Kesuvos, and this is Gemara in Kesuvos, is actually the site of Neturei Karkas Hashkafa, and it was taken very, very seriously by many Gedolim, including Rav Shimshon Val Hirsch, before 1948, and that is, the Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, a very enigmatic refrain, it says three times, Hishpati Eschem B'nais Yerushalayim. Right? The woman that is looking for her beloved says to the daughters of Yerushalayim, whoever they are, I am making you swear, O daughters of Yerushalayim, Im Ta'iru V'im Ta'iru Esa'ava, do not stir up or awaken love. Ad shetechpatz, till it desires to come on its own. Don't stir up the boat. Don't stir up the love. What love is being stirred up here? So the Gemara says in Kesuvos, the Gemara brings a brisa that there were three oaths that the Jewish people made to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shavuos, three Shavuos, at the time of the Chorban, by Hasheni. Now again, the Mefarshim say this does not mean a physical way. In other words, there's no evidence of people actually swearing, but it means in Basin Shalmaila, there were these three Shavuos. One is Lo Yalu Bachayma. Lo Yalu Bachayma means don't climb the wall, and Rashi explains it is forbidden. Right? This is Mamish Fakir from the Ramban. It is forbidden to conquer the land of Israel through milchama, through force of arms. Forbidden. Lo yalu b'chayma. Now, that doesn't say it's usher to live here, right? The Ramban but it does say it's forbidden to conquer. Second is lo yimridu b'umas, that Jewish people made a shvua that they will be faithful citizens of whatever countries they live in. They will not try to overthrow their governments. Of course, Jews have actually been very active in all revolutions, the American Revolution, the Russian Revolution, but says, you know, we're not going to overthrow. And the third one, which again raises a question with Chabad, lo yidchaku esaketz, do not try to bring Mashiach before it's ready. Meaning, what that basically means is, the only way you could try to bring Mashiach is by Torah and mitzvahs, but you don't try to, you know, we want Mashiach now, type of thing. Actually, it means al pi Kabbalah, there are various things you could do to try to hurry up Mashiach, but if we're not ready to be makabel that, that could be a tremendous korban. Okay, so the Megillah Esther time is like this. How can the Ramban say there's a chiyuv of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? Not only is there not a chiyuv, but to establish a Medina is usher. So it's not shayach for there to be a chiyuv. Because if there would be a chiyuv, a shvua not to do it would be nishba levatel es hamitzvah. Right? If you make a shvua not to do a mitzvah, the shvua is not chal. Now, granted, this is not a total kasha on the Ramban, because even if the shvua tells me it's usher to start to establish a medina, usher to make a mochama, I'll get it, right? That doesn't mean there still might be a chiyuv of living here. In other words, it doesn't slug up the Ramban in terms of my chiyuv to live here, but the Ramban makes it a package deal. The Ramban defines the yishuv as milchama. So this is the Megillah Esther's right, and yet the Ramban holds that wouldn't be a problem. How does the Ramban fend for the Shalosh Shavuos? So again, as I said, three out of the four in Yanim are not a problem. The Shalosh Shavuos is only a problem on the Ramban's inyan of kibush. It's takat sarachin. It must be that the Ramban himself holds that Shalosh Shavuos is not a leave it to Hilchasa. It was only a single man diyamar, and we don't pass him this way. But I want to point out though that the Shalosh Shavuos was used, and it is used. Now it's used by Neturei Karta mainly, but the Brisker Rav used it. Many Gedalim, Rav Hirsch used it. Many Gedalim basically said that it was usher to establish a Medina by Muhammad. Now, the counter svara is, well, was the Medina established by a war of aggression? So, here's what we have. After World War I, right, the Ottoman Empire controlled Palestine, I'll call it Palestine because that's what it was called, for 500 years. After World War I, Palestine, which included Jordan and a lot of Syria, became part of the British Mandate. Right? So the British ruled over it from after World War I to 1948. In 1918, after World War I, we had a declaration called the Balfour Declaration. Stanley Balfour was the British Prime Minister, and that said His Majesty's government recognizes that the Jews ought to have a homeland. It is said, and there are edim to this, that the Chafetz Chaim was very much besimcha when the Balfour Declaration was issued, because he said, now the Shavua is mutter. Because the Isser was to establish a Medina through Milchama. The State of Israel was established with the Haskama of the ruling power, which was Britain, and later the Haskama of the nations of the world, which was the United Nations. And if there was Milchama, the Taina is, the Milchama was to defend it from enemies who did not accept the Haskama of the nations. Now, Satmar does not accept it, because they basically say, well, you know, number one, some of that Haskama came because of, like this. It's not like, oh, the nations approved, and therefore all we were attacked. Some of why it was approved was because there were various things that people were doing, like Menachem Begin blowing up the King David Hotel and various other things. So there were milchama-like activities. But, okay, I'm not here to be machriya this, Berumo Shalaylam. I'm just here to give you the shitas. In other words, that they say b'shem the Chafetz Chaim, that the Balfour Declaration, and later, because he died before the United Nations vote, Blibes Haskama, and then they say b'shem the Rav Meir Simcha, who also died before 1948, a different cheshbon in relation to Zionism. And Rav Meir Simcha says that if you go weiter in the Gemara, there's a fourth oath. Klal Yisrael made three Shavuos, and the Umos Ha'elam had to make their own Shavua. And their own Shavua is, Lo Yishabdu Yisrael Yeser Midai. It's a package deal. We agree not to make Milchama. We agree not to be Mirate. We agree to be good citizens. They agree not to afflict us too much. It's a package deal. Zakhtrav Meir Simcha, the Umos Ha'elam, and this is before the Holocaust, after the Holocaust, Kal v'chomer. The Umos Ha'ilam didn't live up to their deal. We're not mechuyev. In other words, our Shavua is taloi on that Shavua. Again, Neturei Karta, I'm not being mezalzel. I mean, the Satmar Rav. The Satmar Rav addresses this, and he says, Mehechi Tesi, that if two different people make Shavuos, like one is conditional on the other, what are you saying? These are separate promises. One guy breaks his Shavua, whatever. But all I'm saying is that this is a possible defense in the Torah world of the legitimacy of his state. Yeah. The UN absolutely agreed. Absolutely. The United Nations approved the creation of the State of Israel. In fact, the very first country that recognized the State of Israel